talent that's here and the talent that is continuing to develop here. We obviously have some mainstay guys like Ian Happ.
Ian Happ, Cubs all-star outfielder.
Drilled in the air, deep left field. Get out the tape measure for Ian Happ. All the way on to Waveland Avenue.
Absolutely crushed that ball.
What I love about Ian is very dedicated and serious about his craft. The detail that he kind of prepares with is really cool.
Gold Glove Award winner.
And Happ makes a great catch up against the left field fence.
And that robs a home run.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
Baseball gods haven't been very nice to me. I've been hitting a lot of balls hard, and they've been going in gloves, and I hate that.
That just means you're doomed.
Connect Roasters coffee enthusiast.
Here's a man that probably has 5 fresh pots a day. He's got an insatiable thirst for coffee.
Ian Happ with Bernstein and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We toast you, Ian Happ.
Let's talk some baseball and more, as we always do, with Ian Happ, the Cubs left fielder, on the Circa Sports Illinois hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. You can follow Ian on Twitter at @IHapp_1. You heard the little snippet of his sadness about balls finding gloves from the Compound Podcast. And we also have to have a little intervention here, because brick walls are still brick walls. Brick walls don't care how many gold gloves you have. They don't care how many all-star teams.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, I don't advise it, running into a brick wall, because it hurts, right?
I can confirm it's still brick. Okay. I wanted to test it out, see if they put something else behind the ivy. They did not. Still brick out there.
Ouch. Is there
that one didn't feel great.
But you don't really have a choice, though, do you? I mean, you can't contort your body, and even with the warning track, you don't know how hard you're actually going to make that impact.
Yeah, I think just that situation in the game, tie game, the 10th or the 9th, was it 10th inning, 9th inning there? Going after that ball and just trying to make a play on it, and especially with nobody out, trying to find a way to get that in the glove and not give them a situation where, you know, they have a chance to score, and, you know, made a really good effort on it and kind of dislodged by the wall. But that's one of those situations where you can't be passive and play it off the wall and let a double land there when you think you might have a chance to catch it.
On the national broadcast, and once Boo got back in the booth, they were talking about how it's the most dangerous outfield in baseball. I'd love to know, is there another outfield that you find to be on the same level or just below when it comes to danger?
I don't think on danger. You know, we got a brick wall. We got the foul lines are right on the field. You know, there's not a lot of room there between the foul line and the wall. I don't know if there's another one that compares on danger. Actually, the Green Monster is pretty hard. You can go into that one hard, but I think just as far as like the actual elements of Wrigley, it's definitely, as far as danger goes, top of the list.
Well, you also got PCA running around wherever you are, so that changes things too. We were thinking of, when we were sitting with you, I was thinking of getting you a present, which was going to be like a little like pet collar with a big bell on it that you could just sort of put on PCA. So you always know where he is. At least you can hear him coming. Because how do we manage his remarkable range and make sure that it's not confusing people or getting in people's way? Is this a practice thing? Is it just talking it through? Whether it's the guy coming back and coming in, or to either
video
or to either side? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's a phenomenal athlete, and I think he's the best, one of the best center fielders in baseball, just as far as range and his ability to go get it. And so I think we're all learning along with like what that feels like, and how we interact with that as teammates and him at the big league level. You know, he's playing with 3 other gold glovers out there, and figuring out, you know, what that means for the limits of the range, and when you let guys make plays and when you have to go make the play, and talking through all that. It's a learning experience. You know, it's a learning experience for all of us at the same time. And the more and more we get to play with each other, you know, Nico and I were able to do this and left. And when he was playing short, and we decided to run into each other in 21 and hurt each other, and both had to go down for 10 days. And the more we played together, the more we learned, and knowing who should take the ball, you know, halfway out, and how to communicate that. And now Dansby and I, second year playing together, have a good rapport on when, you know, communicating pre-pitch, hey, I'm a little bit deeper, you have to go get this, you know, just kind of off the bat, who's going to have the ball when. And it's something that comes with time.
What's your rule with calling a ball? Like, actually, I know when I was a kid, they would say first sound. Like, if you're the first, if you say I got it, you got it, and that's it. And others would say the incoming outfielder automatically has priority. Do you guys have any hard and fast rules about if a guy says I got it, or is there a safe word to say, like, no, I know you said you got it, but I got it, we changed it?
I mean, yeah, there's definitely priority. You know, shortstop's got infield priority, and then outfielders have priority over infielders, and then center fielder has priority over everybody. So, you know, there's definitely a few. If I'm out there and Pete comes running at me yelling, you know, it's his ball. And same thing, you know, if I'm going in on top of Dansby or now Paredes at third, one of those two guys, you know, if I call it, you know, they're getting out of the way. So, you know, we try to make early, you know, the earliest calls you can. I think that's one of the things that, you know, we talk about and try to work on is, hey, if I can call it early and give you time to get out of there, and I can really commit to my line on going to catch the ball. You don't always get the opportunity to do that with some of these balls, but the more you can do that, the better.
How hard is this, you think, maybe even for PCA, where everywhere he's been the best? Like, you guys have done this your whole lives. You've been the best guy. So he's probably been, you know, gap to gap every center field that he's played. But now he is playing with guys that have won gold gloves. How do you say to him, hey, fam, we got it. Like, we're really good at this too. We were the best at what we did too. And hope that he, you know, takes that to heart and goes, oh yeah, I'm comfortable now. I can take a deep breath. These guys know what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that's part of the learning experience. At the same time, we don't want to ever take away, you know, any of his aggressiveness and what he does really well, because even at this level, he still is, you know, elite at running around out there and catching fly balls. So conversations about, you know, gap responsibilities, and it's more about pre-pitch communication, I think, and saying like, hey, you know, I'm going to be on this side of the field. You know, you have all of this room to go get it, you know, in left center or right center, whichever that gap is at that time, and kind of pre-pitch communication and stuff. But, you know, that doesn't change the fact that he's a lead out there and going and getting the baseball. And, you know, we want to give him every opportunity to do that. And I think Nico said it really well after the game. We have a lot of trust in him. We have a lot of trust in him now. We have a lot of trust in him for years to come. And, you know, as a group, we're going to make those plays 99% of the time. It sucks when the 1% happens in a situation like that, but we have all the faith in the world in him running around out there.
He lost the ball in the lights, and you were the first person I thought of, because we've talked about the LED lights out there at Wrigley. Are they better? I don't know if I've ever seen a center fielder lose a ball faster and be like, guys, I don't know where this thing is. And you saw him like cover up because he didn't know where it is. So is that still something that you guys are working with stadium ops on getting right?
The one yesterday?
Was it yesterday, yeah, or was it 2 days? Yeah, yeah, yesterday.
Yesterday, threw him out at home. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that was more of a situation with kind of the cloudiness, you know, a little bit of lights there, but it more of like some clouds and some gray cover. And so I think both guys looked down and peeked at each other to see where they were. And when they looked back up, they kind of lost it. Just sometimes that 6, 7, 8 o'clock hour, kind of depending on time of year, like when you get that in between, especially on like a cloudy day where there's some really dark clouds or the sun's going down, and that's when you can kind of, if you take your eye off the ball and look back up, sometimes you lose it. So both guys had that situation where they peeked at each other, looked back up, and kind of lost the ball. But really good set them up. They camped under it. They set them up, hit off the wall, and then you get the relay. Really good Dansby, some work in there, and Maya. So that's just how you drew it up.
What are your early impressions of Paredes as a teammate?
awesome. I mean, he's been talking to guys. He's been, you know, it feels like he's excited to be here. You know, it's fun. He was in the organization when I was here, but we never played together, you know, so just getting to know him a little bit more and what makes him tick. I think been impressive the way that as smooth as he is at third base. You know, I think I talked to on a podcast, we were talking about it because Shorty played with him kind of when they were super, when Shorty was first drafted and Paredes was super young playing shortstop and second base, and they returned double plays together. And he was saying, hey, this guy's hands like are really special. And I've already seen it, you know, his ability to pick it, make everything look clean and smooth over there. And, you know, I think from an offensive standpoint, you know, you've seen what he's been able to do over the last couple of years. It's in there. He's had some really good at bats and, 10 pitch, 12 pitch at bats that have been pretty impressive. And actually one of the big innings we had might've been in the walk-off against St. Louis. I think he had a 10 or 12 pitch at bat. Then we were able to get to Helsley there. And, you know, some of those things that go a little bit overlooked, but, just the quality of the bat, the eye, you know, there's some really good takes in there too. And, yeah, it's been fun to watch.
We have a listener who's very excited to bring their little one to your camp on Thursday.
Oh, nice.
So what's your camp like for anyone in between the grades 1 through 8? They can go to Ian's camp at Elk Grove High School. And if you look at procamps.com/HAP24, you can find it.
Yeah, I'm excited. We're going to be out at Elk Grove High School on Thursday. And be doing a camp all day and just being able to interact and talk a little bit of baseball and answer questions. You know, obviously we're going to be out there, you know, hitting and throwing and fielding and doing all that stuff, but just to be able to go out and interact and kind of one of like the coolest things for me, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the movie, The Rookie with Dennis Quaid.
Yes.
And, you know, Dennis Quaid is in AAA and he's kind of thinking about his life. And then he goes and watches a Little League game and comes back and says, you know, what we get to do today, Brooks, we get to play baseball. That's one that's always kind of stuck with me because you go through these times and you're 0-for-20 and nothing's falling and it's frustrating and the game's tough. And then you just think about, you know, when you were in Little League and being able to be, you know, I'm about to turn 30 years old and I get to go play baseball every day, like putting that back in perspective. And so whenever I'm driving around Chicago or going to play golf on an off day and drive by a Little League field, like that's always something that pops into my head. So to be able to do this, to be able to go out and just be around kids that love playing the game and I'm excited to do that. I think for me, maybe that's a little bit selfish of me, but I'm excited to kind of see that and watch it and just get to talk to kids about how much they love, you know, playing this game.
It's all right if it's selfish for you. You're allowed to take some of that because we all need to refill that occasionally and whatever it is that we're doing. And if you're giving something and they're giving something, I think it's totally okay. And for you to just be like, yeah, this is something that I need as well as what I'm providing for the campers.
And you know what, Ian, I also think too, if it's just from my experience as like a youth baseball assistant coach, it's so much more fun working with the house league kids than it was the already kind of overcoached travel kids who by the time they're 8 and 9, they've got, you know, hitting coaches breaking things down on iPads for them. Like Justin Stone was literally teaching the travel kids at Wells. And I'm not kidding. And so for the house kids who don't even know what end of the bat to hold and to be able to have them make contact or them just learn how to throw properly, it's there that now you're like, so that person may love baseball for the rest of their life.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the little bit of the pay it forward thing is, you know, our responsibility to leave this game better than we found it. And, you know, if we can on Thursday have a couple people that love the game for the rest of their life because they were able to come out and do this, that's kind of the goal. So I'm super excited. It's at Elk Grove High School on Thursday, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
So we have some beer reviews for you if you want them.
Yeah, you guys actually tried it. I was going to open with that and ask, but I thought I'd wait.
Okay, I was going to email you because we made a family event out of it. Because I brought it home because, you know, Jason was there, and he's like, oh, yeah, we got to try it. We got to try it. I said, no, we're all going to try it. And Zoe doesn't really like beer at all. Beth is kind of in between. But everybody did it. Everybody did their own notes. and it was a smash hit. Absolute smash hit.
Yes.
And even, you know, Zoe doesn't really like beer, but I said, look, you go to Starbucks three times a day, you love coffee, and you like alcohol, so give it a shot. And she goes, oh my God, this is so good. And she goes, what's the, why is it creamy? There's something, because it's kind of creamy tasting. She's like, I expected it to be bitter, and then it almost turns a little sweet at the very end. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's, there's so she loved it. And Beth said, oh yeah, I would definitely order this. And then Jason goes, could you get more? Can you tell Ian that you want more, and then we can have more. I'm like, yeah, thanks. But it was a smash.
Awesome. Awesome. That's super exciting. I think, yeah, that's the cool part about the coffee notes on it, is you expect it to be bitter, and then it ends up being, you know, pretty smooth with a little bit of like fruitiness and that finish. So That's cool.
Yeah. And I had a very similar experience, and it was like one of those things where I'm like, oh, I'm trying, and I'm like, I want to make sure that I have an open mind with this because I know what I'm expecting. And it's the same thing that what Dan said, where I thought that there would be like a bitterness, which I wasn't looking forward to. And the way I described it, and I don't mean like actual taste, but it kind of felt like to me, the finish was like if you were having a mousse.
I was going to say the espresso gelato that we had in Florence, whereas it was almost like a rich finish rather than a bitter finish.
But it didn't feel heavy, which is, I'm not usually a beer drinker, partly because of that. So I love that it had a lightness like you would with like a chocolate mousse. So that's those are my notes.
Awesome. Those are rave reviews. I appreciate this guy.
Oh, well, we appreciate you. And it's just cool looking too. So it's a quality beverage.
Well, and you feel like it's because the can is big.
Yeah.
Like if you're kind of walking around with it, if they're doing it at Salt Shed, having a quart means it's fewer trips back and forth to the bar, and you can actually listen to more music.
It's a good point. You're committed and you can sit down. If we keep getting reviews like this, maybe Goose Island will actually can the thing and put it out, because those are solid.
Yeah, Goose Island, do it.
Get on it.
Get our guy canned and all that good stuff.
All right, feel better. Stop running into walls.
All right, thanks, guys. Talk
Have
to
fun
you soon.
With the campers.
Thanks. See ya.
That's Ian Happ of the Chicago Cubs, who joins us frequently on these airwaves. It's the moment you've been waiting for, coming up next. The bingo card is going to be completely revealed. You heard the semifinalists yesterday. We have pared it down. Ray and Studs worked on it. Kevin Lapka made a fantastic graphic card for you to have. It's going to be tweeted out.
Yep.
You can print it out, and you can have it for Hard Knocks tonight.
And print it!
And print it! And you can have it for the run of the entire series. So we unveil it. Next.
Bernstein and Holmes.
Jason Goff is here in studio with us.
We go from Zion Williamson, Ja Morant, to spinning on finely tailored suits.
Hey, getting yelled at for dancing.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
The Bernstein and Holmes show at its finest.
Yeah, that's what we do, Jay. That's what we're doing over here.
Went to USC in Oklahoma. Morris down still. Fight on.
Yeah.
And my signing bonus is 25.5.
It's unveiled. It's out. I just retweeted it. We have our bingo card with awesome Kevin Lapka created graphics.
Yeah, thanks to Kevin Lapka for doing this for us and putting in the time to get some good representation on the card. If you follow me at Lawrence W. Holmes, you can see it. If you follow Bernsey and Holmes, you can see it. It's right there. Now you've got your card.
Send in the card.
Well, people have got it now.
It says Bernstein and Holmes Hard Knocks Training Camp with the Chicago Bears Bingo. So do you want me to go left to right, top to bottom?
Yes, I would like you, to go left to right and then...
Left to right in rows.
Correct.
Top to bottom. Okay, so these are the 24 that have made the cut. We got the free space in the middle. It just says 670, the score, free space. Which, for my money, is the best kind of free space, because it's a 670, the score, free space.
It's free.
Top left, George McCaskey on a scooter.
Whee!
Aaron Rodgers, I own you.
I own you!
Do we have to see it, or can it just be referenced in any way?
It just has to be referenced.
Okay. The history of Virginia McCaskey. And that, again, could be...
The picture of her and her dad.
Right. It doesn't have to be that specific. Drone footage of Arlington Heights. So I imagine helicopter. If it were an actual helicopter, that would count.
I was just going to say, enough, what if it's a helicopter?
Aerial footage. How do we know? I think aerial footage the judges will accept.
Strangely enough, Lapka already has it.
Yeah, where did he get that?
I don't know.
Is he setting the drone up?
Apparently.
Deep dish pizza. And they chose the right brand in the graphic. They chose my favorite deep dish pizza place. Brandon Johnson cameo. This is the second row left to right. Brandon Johnson cameo. Score audio. The picture is, of course, the non-bankruptcy inducing Lawrence Holmes.
For once. For once, this show is not the picture of bankruptcy.
As far as we know.
Right. We can't say that for sure. But
Kevin Warren's morning routine. Bears dubious QB history. Oh, poor Mitch has to have his card pulled on that one. You should have put a picture of Rusty Lish.
Moses Moreno should have been the pick.
Craig Krenzel would have been good there. Anybody. Even like, you know, Bob Avellini. Top Golf.
Pow, pow, pow.
Crime.
Crime.
Row 3. Super Bowl Shuffle. Any player signing a contract. This is now. I'm just throwing a bouquet to that bit. But there's a picture of Caleb kind of doing his half-hearted bear claw. Any player signing a contract. The one next to that is 670. The score, free space. On the other side, L trains in the opening montage.
I like that. That's good.
Kelly Eberflus cameo. The woman behind the man, behind the team.
There's another cameo that we'll get to after we go through the bingo.
Yep, the cameos are next to each other, so you're going to have to get both cameos to get a vertical bingo here. Row 4, Staley DeBear interacting with fans.
Booty scoot.
He's just expressing his glands. They have to do that. DJ Moore's family. A Walter Payton reference. The Bears defense tradition. The picture.
Of the sack machine.
The sack man. Richard Dent.
The sack man.
The sack man. Brian Urlacher. Next to that.
Sack machine.
Mark Grody cameo.
Love it. Not Mark Grody on cameo.
Or in the band cameo. He's not in the group. Bottom row. Colin Johnson's injury comeback story.
We know we're getting that.
Think so too.
That's basically a free space.
Inside info. George McCaskey interacting with fans.
You could get a 2-for-1 on that one.
Mm-hmm.
You could get George on the scooter while interacting with fans.
Mm-hmm. A sighting of Bear Man, the Hall of Famer himself. That is Don Wachter.
Bear Man!
Put some respect on Bear Man's name. We know he's been a guest on this show. That's Don Wachter. Matt Eberflus giving out nicknames. And finally, in the bottom right corner, the Steve McMichael feature story.
All right, so we've got a bingo card. You should have it available while you're watching Hard Knocks tonight. And then you can tell us if you got yourself a bingo there.
A one-episode bingo would be a thing, because this is for the length of the series.
If there's a one-episode bingo, then we might have to do another card.
Well, I think we just reshuffle, right? Or something like that?
Oh, I say we just get new stuff.
There was stuff we left on the cutting room floor.
100%. 100%.
Just redo it.
Would you like to see who the cameo is that they've put out there for people? That is going to make a lot of Bears fans, I think, even more hyped up. So, remember last year when I was telling you that I read, well, I'll just give you this. This is Matt Eberflus talking to a legendary coach about Caleb Williams.
Here's my theory on why NFL quarterbacks fail at such a dramatic rate. Mm-hmm. To me, expectations are a killer. This kid you got, this kid's got so much media, so much hype, so much expectation on doing well. And he has to develop so quickly to meet the expectations that everybody has for him, it's almost impossible. The expectations are a killer. Mm-hmm. But yet, to use your word, development is the key for him. You know, like Peyton Manning threw 28 interceptions when he was a rookie. It's the most in the history of all.
Manning looks to throw, tipped and intercepted.
It's unbelievable.
Put the nail on it.
But it didn't affect them. It's like the scoreboard. The scoreboard don't mean anything until the game's over.
So that was Nick Saban, who coached Matt Eberflus in college. And if you read Saban's book, Eberflus is quoted in it quite a few times. So they have quite the relationship. So there you go. The GOAT of college coaches, who, by the way, did fail miserably as a professional coach, helping out Matt Eberflus.
I think it's a... I don't think he said much there. I mean, it sounds like when Nick Saban talks and speaks in those tones, it sounds important, but I don't think there was a whole lot there. Yeah, he's a very confident kid who's going to embrace high expectations.
What I'll say, though, about what's right about what he said, and maybe something that he's not realizing, is that expectation weight is not, it's different than what we ordinarily have for a number one pick. Because usually a number one pick is going to a rotten team. So if he does throw 28 interceptions, it makes sense because of the people that he's surrounded by. If Caleb Williams throws 28 interceptions with the group that has been assembled for him, it's a different thing than other quarterbacks because the situation is different. The expectation is different. And it's not just the expectation for Caleb. It's a Bears expectation.
They're supposed to be good.
Correct.
And he's supposed to be the reason why they're good. And he's never played a down of NFL football.
So if this ends with 28 interceptions, no one's going to feel good about it.
No, we also understand that you can't compare. The Peyton Manning thing, what year was that? It's 100 years ago.
1998, right?
That was his rookie year?
I think that's right, because I think Peyton and I are the same age.
Because that's a long-ass time ago, folks. And the understanding of how damaging interceptions are has changed. Interceptions used to be a thing that just happened, and it was no big deal, and you get the ball back. But now knowing about efficiency and understanding about avoiding turnovers, you can't bring that up anywhere. Brett Favre threw a lot of interceptions. Troy Aikman threw a lot of interceptions. All quarterbacks threw interceptions. But that's before people started saying, wait a second, what if we tried to not throw interceptions?
My God, he threw the ball 575 times.
Right.
So, 98 season, started all 16 games. 3,739 yards, 26 touchdowns, 28 interceptions for Peyton Manning that season. Then he cut that almost in half the next season and the next season after that. Then it jumped back up to 23 interceptions. But then you get to the meat of his career. He got that down to single digits in one of those seasons. 10 was about where he was at for the rest of his career per season.
And all props to Nick Saban for being the best college football coach ever in the whole Mount Rushmore thing.
Roll damn tight.
But that's an old guy reference. You're giving me Peyton Manning's interception numbers? Peyton Manning, for most people now, is a ubiquitous TV guy.
He's a pitch man.
Yeah, people don't even know he played football.
Yeah, he's a pitch man.
He's a, yeah, He's pitching Bush's beans.
And the Super Bowl that he won, we're talking about people going into the Hall of Fame who played against him, and that was almost 20 years ago.
I'm trying to think.
Not the one that the team won and he happened to be the quarterback of. Like, that's different.
Who would be a comp for a football, a famous, successful, like Hall of Fame level football player who was so ubiquitous as a pitch man that people are like, oh, he played football?
Terry Bradshaw.
But don't people know he played? I mean, the guy
people still know Peyton Manning played.
I know.
Like, he's not that far out of the range.
Like Namath was, by the time I understood what was going on, he was primarily selling things. But I still knew him as a football player.
I guarantee you there are people who see Terry Bradshaw's reality show and they're like, oh, that's that nice old guy with the southern accent.
Is that the Cajun chef Justin Wilson?
Yeah.
Right. That's probably right. Yeah, Bradshaw's probably the best example of just, because he got into acting fairly quickly. Even before his playing career was over, he was doing movies and stuff. That's pretty good. But to go back to that, I don't think it applies at all to Caleb Williams. Not one bit.
It'd be interesting to see how all this goes.
That's why my response is always, is Caleb good? Is Caleb good? And I say,
shrug emoji.
He better be.
I hope that he is, because if he's not,
he better be.
It's going to be rough on people.
I sure hope he's good. Coming up next on High Noon, I have a very low speed chase, the best part of which we have to picture in our imagination.
I'm going to mention Pete Futak.
Well, that's your first problem.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes.
I'm still stuck, Dan, in trying to figure out exactly what it is
we do here.
Right? Well, no, that part I've figured it out. There's fart jokes and mascots. That's all is going on here.
Bernstein and Holmes.
Fart jokes and mascots.
Middays 10 to 2. On 670 The Score.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there. Out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
It's high noon. We started out by celebrating what feels like a game day. Bears on Hard Knocks starting tonight. And we've had some fun with it. We put out the bingo card. It is there. It is at the 670 The Score Twitter feed. I retweeted it, as did Lawrence.
So it's also pinned at Bernsey Holton, top of the page there.
There you go.
It'll be there throughout the series.
Grab it. You can just keep an eye on it. If you just want to have fun with it on your phone, you can print it out if you want to actually play bingo along with it. But we also look seriously. What do we want to know? What do we want to see? What do we want to learn about the Bears? And we talked about the psychology of the documentary and having that good kind of Stockholm syndrome where you learn to love your captors, and they're around, and people's guard, I think, will tend to come down as the series unfolds. But remember, these things are not shot contemporaneously sometimes with the episodes, so they'll move things around.
Yeah.
And they'll play with time a little bit. And sometimes, like I say, the best stuff is the stuff they get later, and it may replace the stuff they get earlier because it's better. Chris Emma gave us the latest on the Bears walkthrough. The injured offensive linemen were at least healthy enough to walk through, so that's good. We discussed the ongoing avant-garde performance art that is White Sox quote-unquote baseball. Woo-hoo. Ian Happ was fun today, talking about his camp coming up and our reviews of his coffee and his decision to run into brick walls.
His beer.
Excuse me. Beer that tastes like coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. It's really, really good, I'm telling you. But I think you got to go to Salt Shed to get it. But it's excellent.
It's High Noon.
Dan, do you know how to spell Pete Futak's last name?
F-I-U.
Stop. Pitbull Stadium comes to Miami as recording sensation Pitbull. And what? F-I-U agree to a wide-ranging 5-year, $6 million deal. So Pitbull is going to have the naming rights for FIU Stadium, which will now be referred to as Pitbull Stadium.
Why didn't Pete Futak buy the naming rights?
I don't know. He has enough money to do it, but it's going to be Pitbull Stadium, a 5-year deal. He can renegotiate after every deal. FIU has been, this is according to CBS Sports, FIU has been searching for relevance in a highly competitive market since adopting an FBS program in 2005. And here's what they've got as part of the deal. Pitbull will create an anthem for FIU athletics, post on social media about FIU 12 times a year, and appear at one fundraising event. Additionally, his Voli 305, because he's Mr. 305, vodka, is going to be the preferred brand sold at Pitbull Stadium, which first game is September 7th against Central Michigan.
Dale.
Okay. This gets back to my longtime theory about stadium naming rights, is that if you put a fund together that shorts every company that buys stadium naming rights, I think you'd be in the black. It's not exactly the Holmes maneuver, but if you start talking about if you look at the number of bankruptcies that have occurred and what it says about a company when they decide to do this, sometimes it's some like end bull market, fat and happy, trying to park some cash, whether it's crypto or whether it was, you know, all the airlines went bankrupt when they did it. You had Enron and all of the others, the pre-bubble companies. There's always something bubbly about it. And not in the case of Pitbull, but
I mean,
I'm wondering.
You know who's furious about this? Kevin Warren. It's like we could have had that Pitbull money. The new stadium on the lakefront. If it wasn't for you meddling kids.
And that mangy dog.
Well, this is what you call the old slow speed chase. A pet tortoise went missing from his owner's home in Portland. So this tortoise's name is Bowser. And Bowser was reported missing from a home, and he was gone for 2 days. But Bowser was found. The Portland Police Bureau said members of the East Precinct Neighborhood Response Team were on an unrelated assignment when they encountered a tortoise on a multi-use path along the west side of Interstate 205.
Mr. 305.
And they realized that this had to be the missing tortoise. This was Bowser. But here's what's fascinating.
Do you still got Princess Peach?
Oh, that's the...
It's a Mario.
I know, Mario Super Sluggers, Bowser, right?
It's fine.
Which animal is Bowser? Is he the dinosaur?
He's a tortoise.
Oh, Bowser's... Okay, I never knew.
That's why it's a great name.
Oh, now I...
I don't know if he's technically a tortoise, but he's some kind of turtle.
Okay, I always got him confused. Then, I'm thinking of Funky Kong. The guy goes, go, 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 before he hits the ball with the surfboard. I'm thinking of that from Mario. I only know it from Mario Super Sluggers. So Bowser was found. Now, the key is on the west side of Interstate 205. Their house is on the east side of the interstate.
East side?
That means the tortoise safely crossed the interstate.
Oh, wow. I thought it was the chicken that was trying to get across the road.
I thought it was Frogger. I thought it was a frog that you had to navigate the whole way through. But think about that. They found the tortoise on the other side of a busy interstate.
He's like, hey, how's it going?
How'd you get here?
I walked.
What do you mean you walked?
Slowly.
It's one of my favorite things when they installed, Layla and I were talking about this off the air the other day. They installed the animal bridge, a wildlife bridge, over is it the 101 in LA that runs up the coast there?
The one, I thought.
Or the one, it's like the Santa Monica, and they installed a wildlife bridge and they put cameras there at night, and it's incredible what they see and how they learn to use it. But he didn't have one of those. Bowser actually crossed a busy interstate at the speed that only a tortoise can go, which is not fast. So congratulations to him.
So he won the race.
Buy a lottery ticket.
Maybe the hare beat him, but we don't know. Because the hare probably just got out of there.
Yeah, but the lesson is that the hair
ricochet rabbit.
But no, you're combining things now. That's what? Sheriff Bing 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 ricochet Same. Rabbit.
Yeah,
but that's not the tortoise and the hare.
So is it a rabbit?
Yeah, but not all rabbits are hares.
Did the rabbit go bing bing bing? Pew. Yeah, because
He said
all right.
He said Sheriff Bing 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 ricochet rabbit.
And that's what I did.
Yeah.
You don't even know who Bowser is.
I know that there's a Bowser. I just know it was the turtle guy.
So you've never played Super Mario Brothers?
Never.
Okay.
Connor tried to get me to play it. He tried to show me the first level. But I can't. The controller's weird.
Do, 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 do.
Yes, he had a thing that was like, jump on this and hit your head on this, and that's a coin.
What did he have you playing on N64?
He found, he hooked it up to a TV in here.
And I got the handheld. I could bring it in.
He tried to teach me, but it was
N64. All those Nintendo controllers got weird after the NES and Super Nintendo.
It's got the it's the old NES. Like it's literally like a handheld version of the NES.
That's how it should be.
And it's got the regular controller.
I don't know why Nintendo got so weird with their controllers.
Do you know that there was a producer here who used to play PlayStation overnight?
Was that the guy who used to sleep in my office?
Is that why there used to be a PS2 in the locker room over here? Okay.
Are you talking about back at NBC?
Yes.
Was it Murph's producer?
He's one of the people that produced Murph's show.
Was it?
Let's call him Sal.
Okay, that's who it was then. Yeah, and I come in one morning and he's asleep on the floor.
Yeah, he used to have it all set up for overnights.
Like, why are you sleeping on the floor?
But I think I don't think we had anything live other than spots to play. I think that was when we were like the sports fan radio network or...
Oh, God.
JT the Brick was on or something. I don't know. But yeah, he used to play.
I think it was JD the Bag.
I'm not here to tell you that.
What's next? Oh, Patrick Manley talking about the new kickoff rule. Because... we have no idea what they're actually going to do because apparently no team is actually showing what they're going to do. Rumor has it that Velus Jones has been working with the running backs, which tells me that there's a play on here of some kind.
Yeah, you're learning how to run all sorts of run plays and what blocking looks like on those plays and where the holes will be. So why don't we let an expert talk about it? Patrick Manley, you will hear from him next on The Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes.
I'm still stuck, Dan, in trying to figure out exactly what it is we do here. Right? Well, no, that part I've figured it out. There's fart jokes and mascots. That's all is going on here.
Bernstein and Holmes.
Fart jokes and mascots.
Middays 10 to 2. On 670 The Score.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there. Out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
It's high noon. We started out by celebrating what feels like a game day. Bears on Hard Knocks starting tonight. And we've had some fun with it. We put out the bingo card. It is there. It is at the 670 The Score Twitter feed. I retweeted it, as did Lawrence.
So it's also pinned at Bernsey Holton, top of the page there.
So
it'll be there throughout the series.
Grab it. You can just keep an eye on it. If you just want to have fun with it on your phone, you can print it out if you want to actually play bingo along with it. But we also look seriously. What do we want to know? What do we want to see? What do we want to learn about the Bears? And we talked about the psychology of the documentary and having that good kind of Stockholm syndrome where you learn to love your captors, and they're around, and people's guard, I think, will tend to come down as the series unfolds. But remember, these things are not shot contemporaneously sometimes with the episodes, so they'll move things around.
Yeah.
And they'll play with time a little bit. And sometimes, like I say, the best stuff is the stuff they get later, and it may replace the stuff they get earlier because it's better. Chris Emma gave us the latest on the Bears' walkthrough. The injured offensive linemen were at least healthy enough to walk through, so that's good. We discussed the ongoing avant-garde performance art that is White Sox quote-unquote baseball. Woo-hoo. Ian Happ was fun today, talking about his camp coming up and our reviews of his coffee and his decision to run into brick walls.
His beer.
Excuse me. Beer that tastes like coffee.
Mm-hmm.
It's really good. It's really, really good, I'm telling you. But it's, you, I think you got to go to Salt Shed to get it. But it's excellent.
It's high noon.
Dan, do you know how to spell Pete Futak's last name?
F-I-U.
Stop. Pitbull Stadium comes to Miami as recording sensation Pitbull. And what? FIU agree to a wide-ranging five-year, $6 million deal. So Pitbull is going to have the naming rights for FIU Stadium, which will now be referred to as Pitbull Stadium.
Why didn't Pete Futak buy the naming rights?
I don't know. He has enough money to do it, but it's going to be Pitbull Stadium, a five-year deal. You can renegotiate after every deal. FIU has been, this is according to CBS Sports, FIU has been searching for relevance in a highly competitive market since adopting an FBS program in 2005. And here's what they've got as part of the deal. Pitbull will create an anthem for FIU athletics, post on social media about FIU 12 times a year, and appear at one fundraising event. Additionally, his Voli 305, because he's Mr. 305, vodka, is going to be the preferred brand sold at Pitbull Stadium, which first game is September 7th against Central Michigan.
Dale. Okay. This gets back to my longtime theory about stadium naming rights, is that if you put a fund together that shorts every company that buys stadium naming rights, I think you'd be in the black. It's not exactly the Holmes maneuver, but if you start talking about if you look at the number of bankruptcies that have occurred and what it says about a company when they decide to do this, sometimes it's some like end bull market, fat and happy, trying to park some cash, whether it's crypto or whether it was, you know, all the airlines went bankrupt when they did it. You had Enron and all of the others, the pre-bubble companies. There's always something bubbly about it. And not in the case of Pitbull, but
I mean,
I'm wondering.
You know who's furious about this? Kevin Warren. It's like we could have had that Pitbull money. The new stadium on the lakefront. If it wasn't for you meddling kids.
And that mangy dog. Well, this is what you call the old slow speed chase. A pet tortoise went missing from his owner's home in Portland. So this tortoise's name is Bowser. And Bowser was reported missing from a home, and he was gone for 2 days. But Bowser was found. The Portland Police Bureau said members of the East Precinct Neighborhood Response Team were on an unrelated assignment when they encountered a tortoise on a multi-use path along the west side of Interstate 205.
Mr. 305.
And they realized that this had to be the missing tortoise. This was Bowser. But here's what's fascinating.
Do you still got Princess Peach?
Oh, that's the...
It's a Mario.
Mario, I know, Mario Super Sluggers, Bowser, right?
It's fine.
Which animal is Bowser? Is he the dinosaur?
He's a tortoise.
Oh, Bowser's... okay, I never knew.
That's why it's a great name.
Oh, now I
don't know if he's technically a tortoise, but he's some kind of turtle.
Okay, I always got him confused. Then, I'm thinking of Funky Kong. The guy goes, go, 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 before he hits the ball with the surfboard. I'm thinking of that from Mario. I only know it from Mario Super Sluggers. So Bowser was found. Now, the key is on the west side of Interstate 205. Their house is on the east side of the interstate.
East side?
That means the tortoise safely crossed the interstate.
Oh, wow. I thought it was the chicken that was trying to get across the road.
I thought it was Frogger. I thought it was a frog that you had to navigate the whole way through. But think about that. They found the tortoise on the other side of a busy interstate.
He's like, hey, how's it going?
How'd you get here?
I walked.
What do you mean you walked?
Slowly.
It's one of my favorite things when they installed, Layla and I were talking about this off the air the other day. They installed the animal bridge, a wildlife bridge over, what's the, is it the 101 in L.A.? That runs up the coast there?
The one, I thought.
Or the one, it's like the Santa Monica. And they installed a wildlife bridge, and they put cameras there at night, and it's incredible what the what they see and what is what they how they learn to use it. But he didn't have one of those. Bowser actually crossed a busy interstate at the speed that only a tortoise can go, which is not fast. So congratulations to him.
So he won the race.
Buy a lottery ticket.
Maybe that. Maybe the hare beat him, but we don't know, because the hare probably just got out of there.
Yeah, but the lesson is that the hare
ricochet rabbit.
But no, you're combining things now. That's what? Sheriff Bing 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 ricochet same. Rabbit.
Yeah,
but that's not the tortoise and the hare.
So is it a rabbit?
Yeah, but not all rabbits are hares.
Did the rabbit go bing bing bing? Pew. Yeah, because
he said
all right.
He said, Sheriff, bing, 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 ricochet rabbit.
And he's, that's what I did.
Yeah,
you don't even know who Bowser is.
I know that there's a Bowser. I just know it was the turtle guy.
So you've never played Super Mario Brothers?
Never.
Okay.
Connor tried to get me to play it. He tried to show me the first level. But I can't. The controller's weird. Yes, he had a thing that was like, jump on this and hit your head on this, and that's a coin.
What did he have you playing on N64?
He found, he hooked it up to a TV in here.
And I got the handheld. I could bring it in.
He tried to teach me, but it was...
N64, all those Nintendo controllers got weird after the NES and Super Nintendo.
It's the old NES. Like, it's literally like a handheld version of the NES.
That's how it should be.
And it's got the regular controller.
I don't know why Nintendo got so weird with their controllers.
Do you know that there was a producer here who used to play PlayStation overnight?
Was that the guy who used to sleep in my office?
Is that why there used to be a PS2 in the locker room over here? Okay.
Are you talking about back at NBC?
Yes.
Was it Murph's producer?
He's one of the people that produced Murph's show.
Was it?
Let's call him Sal.
Okay, that's who it was then. Yeah, and I come in one morning and he's asleep on the floor.
Yeah, he used to have it all set up for overnights.
Like, why are you sleeping on the floor?
But I think that was, I don't think we had anything live other than spots to play. I think that was when we were like the sports fan radio network or.
Oh, God.
JT the Brick was on or something. I don't know. But yeah, he used to play.
I think it was JD the Bag.
I'm not here to tell you that.
What's next? Oh, Patrick Manley talking about the new kickoff rule. Because we have no idea what they're actually going to do. Because apparently no team is actually showing what they're going to do. Rumor has it that Velus Jones has been working with the running backs. Which tells me that there's a play on here of some kind.
Yeah, you're learning how to run all sorts of run plays and what blocking looks like on those plays and where the holes will be. So why don't we let an expert talk about it? Patrick Manley, you will hear from him next on The Score.